Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host,
Duber Marklar. Should we get a service before all the guests leave?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we should probably get going.
Yeah.
We have a live audience and whatnot, so.
Yeah, there's 40 seconds.
Hello and welcome to episode 206. I'm the Mean Team, and today I'm joined by regular co-hosts Dan Q.
To sieve is an abstract craft.
Makalua.
Did they ever actually explain what the hell taurine is in Red Bull?
Imagine.
Yeah, I'm going back to bed.
And guest co-host Uber.
You're going to bed 3 hours earlier here, damn it.
It's always time to go back to bed.
Speaking of things you might do in bed.
Yes. Best segue. We're off to a great start. Let's go.
You know exactly what a spot you're asking for with that question, right?
Yep, and I'm biting my tongue. First item on the agenda, and I'm not sure why Dan led with the in-bed segue, but okay. There is a new mod for Minecraft completely based around Civilization gameplay, which allows you and a large number of other people to play on a server where you can essentially build cities, expand borders, trade, research technology, and try to take over the world.
Thank you, Pinky. And the brain.
So is that what the new server's going to be like?
I want to axe thrust Dan.
Take a number.
There's something magical about that first time you play a game.
For some people listening and wondering, wait a minute, don't you have a sibling show for that? No. See, that's mods within Civ. This is a Civ mod within another game. That's the impressive thing. Sometimes I know Modcast has talked about other games. Hey, experience game X within Civ, but now you can experience Civ within game X, which is Minecraft. And those of us on the panel, including our guest, know something about Minecraft. There's this little unofficial spinoff called Polycraft, and this mod is trying to marry Polycraft and Polycast, which is not a necessarily good thing, you know, because they're related, but it's still there.
The first boot up, revealing the world with all its bewitching potential. And for a brief, beautiful moment, you don't quite know all the rules.
It's currently up to version 1.2. It's only a 69 megabyte download. According to Kotaku, there are ambitious Minecraft mods, and then there's the kind that tries to turn Mojang's game into one of the best and most epic strategy games of all time, Civ. The multiplayer mod features a lot of what makes Civ so great, like trade tools, conflicts, tech trees, spies, wonders, and diplomacy, among other things. Oh, and mining, because it's Minecraft, obviously.
You can build a world, but breathing life into it takes more than just blocks. It takes a choice between order and chaos.
There's a decent description that not only talks about the changes from vanilla Minecraft, so if you're more familiar with Minecraft, you're just familiar with Minecraft, then you have an idea of what the Civ mod is about. But if you're wondering, how exactly does Civ translate into Minecraft? There are multiple victory conditions, including culture and science. Then, as Uber said, you trade, you fight, you generate science, and there is a tech tree that is reminiscent-ish of the upcoming Beyond Earth, because it's not linear. It says it really depends on your starting location. But there are certain things that you have to get. For example, you need ironworking to be able to use iron weapons and armor. You need industrialism to use diamond weapons and armor. And sorry, Phil, you need to wait till you get to gunpowder to use TNT.
Ooh.
You also have to farm, so this ties a little bit now into the changes from vanilla Minecraft. You can only grow carrots, potatoes, and wheat in farms or garden, although there is a grocer that you can go to if you're too lazy to actually grow things. Mob spawners exist, but will not spawn mobs.
Okay.
So, I don't know, why is there a mob spawner? I don't understand.
Barbarians.
Villager trading is disabled. Emeralds can be exchanged for coins at the bank structure instead. Horses do not spawn in the wild. It must be purchased at a stable structure. Leather armor makes you 10% faster, while diamond and iron armor makes you 10% slower. Like, oh, what's this with realism and gameplay? No. No, can't be.
There's a reason to ever actually use leather armor, so that's something.
Nether is completely disabled, quote-unquote. I don't know why just saying Nether is disabled there isn't sufficient. When water touches lava, netherrack is generated instead of cobblestone to prevent cobblestone generators.
So you have netherrack generators?
Well, I'm kind of thinking, so what about cobblestone generators? Well, cobblestone is valuable in that it can be processed, and it gives chances for rare minerals like iron ingots, gold ingots, diamonds, and emeralds, which can then be used, you send it to the bank, which can then be translated into currency to buy pretty well anything and everything you could possibly want. There was a quote in here about fighting, however. Wartime, when blocks can be attacked, is usually once per week across the whole map. And what you do when I say blocks is there are control blocks in your capital and town halls. There are 8 in total. And once they're gone, your civ or your town is conquered. So, of course, if you only have your capital and then that's taken, then you are conquered. But the description reminds me, both Civilization World and even Civilization Online, in the sense that you are not just running a civ by yourself. You need the help of other people on the server. You, as an individual character, are part of a civ. And then there are other people that you are working cooperatively, or cooperative-ish, with in order to go towards whatever victory condition you're going for. It's really not explained so much about the science and cultural victory conditions, except world wonders are key to both of those. So you can also build world wonders. Biomes are treated like different terrain types and whatnot. So it's a pretty ambitious endeavor they got going on here.
Yeah, sounds impressive.
Oh, and in terms of government, there are actually government types. And I'm like, whoa, time warp back to Civilization 3, 1, and 2. What the heck?
Yeah. I want to be part of the Fanatic government. That one was always the best.
Welcome to Civcraft.
Apparently, Joystick is 10 years old or something.
Either.
Well, in internet terms, yes.
Joystick has a 10th anniversary celebration going on. Their news content director, interesting title, revealed his top pick of all time in the last 10 years, which was Civilization V. And then they did a little 3-minute video about him talking about it.
Yeah, it was actually one of the shorter videos out of all of the favorite games of the last decade selections, of which there were about 9 or 10 in total. He had a number of comments that I think everyone here and a lot of our listeners, if not all of our listeners, can relate to.
I've easily spent more time with this series than any other over the years. The series has had a lot of changes over the years. It stayed true to its epic roots.
I'm certain there's parts of the Civ community that may or may not agree with that.
Following several expansions to Civilization V, the hardcore haters have calmed down.
I don't know if they've calmed down necessarily. They're just not maybe not as vocal as they used to be because they're moved on.
Yeah. I was going to say they all ran away because they said, we're out.
There was one line, though, that I thought was kind of, I think I know what he's getting at, but I think it's a bit too broad a stroke, as it were.
Firaxis doesn't make Civilization for strategy game players. It makes the series for players interested in strategy games.
One does not necessarily preclude the other. All I can think of is he's trying to make a comparison to grand strategy games like Europa Universalis.
Yeah, they don't make games for players either.
No. They make games for developers and people who understand algebra.
People whose frustration tolerance levels are atmospheric, or stratospheric, sorry.
We couldn't possibly be half-referencing Paradox. Definitely.
No, we'd never do that.
Yeah, them having a PR nightmare in the last week. Where their studio had basically told everybody to go fuck themselves.
I'm totally not paraphrasing either, by the way.
Yeah, and while Dan will have bleeped that out, I am not paraphrasing. He actually did it.
Yeah. Well, he didn't say that exactly. He said,
yeah, I know,
give an F about the AI.
Yeah.
Civilization V stands out, you know, as a strategy title for the slightly more evolved player. And it's not designed for a niche audience.
Whoa, easy, easy.
What you saying, bro?
Well, compared to what? Like Call of Duty or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, compared to other games.
Yeah, I can certainly think of some games that you would say would have to be more evolved to handle Civ relative to them.
Of all the titles that were mentioned, Civ was one of only three that was PC specifically, the others being League of Legends and Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. There was Half-Life 2 and Mass Effect 2, which are, of course, PC and console, but all the other titles were one console or multiple console titles only. Dragon Quest VIII, Nier, Persona 4, Shadow of the Colossus, Super Mario Galaxy 2, and The Walking Dead.
No Candy Crush? Gonna have the Candy Crush.
It creates a more accessible design, which is a term that has become dirty by the likes of Candy Crush and Farmville over the years.
It does favorite game of the last decade. It doesn't say best, so for anyone wondering what the heck, sometimes your favorite game doesn't necessarily have to be the best game.
Well, and it's not, you know, like a consensus ranking. It's the people of joysticks' favorite games from the last 10 years.
Exactly.
Recorded for episode 204 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Mad Jin, and Bruno Prado Santos.
Phil telling us about Civilization V on Linux. Phil knows something about Linux. I don't know. It's a theory.
Well, it doesn't seem to work very well.
It's been my primary OS for a few years now, but Civ 5 was quite doable with Wine. Still, it's much appreciated to have a native version.
Wait, Phil, you've been using Linux? I had no idea.
I know, right?
So crazy.
Ah, complete coincidence.
Do we have something to clear out the sarcasm in here?
It's interesting, though, because I just did a Windows installation on my second hard drive recently, and I thought Linux was supposed to be the harder one, but you know, I didn't have to unplug my hard drive to install Linux, and I certainly didn't have to scrounge up drivers just to get internet access to install my other drivers on Linux, which you have to do on Windows, so I don't know. To me, the only hard part, and this is a very good trend from Steam in general, it was installing Windows games on Linux. That's really the only frustrating thing I've ever encountered on this OS, aside from learning the recording setup. But that was more user error than the fault of the OS. But when it came to games, it's just frustrating sometimes because there's so many loopholes you have Windows games on it. Civ 5 wasn't that bad with that, actually. Quite a few versions of Wine ran it pretty well. But you're still going to take a performance hit on Mac and Linux, unfortunately, until games drop their hankering for running DirectX. I'm sure native it'll run a little better still.
The editor-in-chief for TechGage, there are now more than 500 games for Linux on Steam. So that's about, what, 450 more than you can get for the Mac now? Is that about right?
Yeah, the Steam box is really pushing for cross-platform stuff, so that's pretty big if you're on off Linux.
Yeah, it could be that Steam's just saying, like, okay, you're going to make a new game, put it on Linux. Yeah. Otherwise, we increase your costs.
It is that all of Civilization V is available. That's all the expansion packs. That's the two expansion packs. As well as all downloadable content is now available through SteamOS.
Yay!
And it plays nicely with Windows and Mac.
Yay! Yay.
Do Windows and Mac play nicely with your computer?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, considering it right at the beginning of this episode, I blue screened to death.
Question answered.
Well, Mac just doesn't let you do anything at all, ever. And it's usually pretty stable because of that.
We're stable. We won't let you do anything. Don't worry. It's all good.
That's how it goes.
I liked how Rob concluded his very brief review of Civ 5 on Linux, and it was actually more focused on the technical aspects, so I'm condensing what he said greatly, to the end, which is, in quick testing, the performance of the game was fantastic, emphasis added by me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't trust that as far as anyone can throw it when it comes to other people evaluating the performance of the game, because usually they don't play at the same speeds that I like to play, so... Unless you're, like, spamming end turn, you're not going to notice a huge performance hit, unless it's just awful.
Rob says, overall, and despite the niggles, I can say that Aspyr has done a fantastic job in porting Civilization V over. Now all I can think about is which other titles the company might be able to port down the road, but I don't want to get too greedy. To which a fellow TechGage writer, Caden, said, why you say greedy? Is it because you want to be set free from the bonds of Windows-only gaming? That's not greedy. That is revolutionary. But I prefer Dwayne Glode's response, which was, now Linux users can waste hundreds of hours of playing Civ just like Windows users.
It's not time wasted.
It's time well wasted.
Oh, will you stop advertising?
It's everything else that's time wasted that could have been playing the games.
I don't know. Pretty soon, we're going to need to be given a break. Break me off a piece of the... Okay, I'll stop.
Oh, yes. Please do.
Yeah. Okay, how many TV stations' taglines have you stolen today?
All of them.
Seriously.
You stole all your taglines.
Speaking of taglines, I don't know. Where do you want to go today? Rolling Stone! That's Rolling Stone, not Rolling Stones. The top 10 most addictive video games. Game never over. So again, most addictive, not necessarily best, which is important as I go through some of these titles. Now, number 10, Donkey Kong. Number 9, Sokoban. 8, Snood. Yeah, I had to look that one up, I have to admit.
Oh, I played Snood.
Never played Snood. That one completely took me by surprise. Tetris Minecraft is in 6th. Hey!
Only 6? As far as addiction levels goes, I don't know about that.
Well, yeah, Phil talked about Candy Crush. Candy Crush Saga is 5th, so yeah, it's actually higher on this list. Oh, Angry Birds is 4, StarCraft is 3, World of Warcraft is 2nd, and Civilization is number 1 on this list.
You see, I speak somewhat from ignorance here, as I've not played a lot of WoW, but my understanding is that more lives have been heavily affected by World of Warcraft than most other games.
Yeah, it's people have died playing WoW.
So yeah, and StarCraft.
There's an entire, I think, medical condition in, I want to say, South Korea, where they will actually treat people for addiction to WoW. No,
South Korea would be StarCraft.
For StarCraft, but I know WoW.
There was a Korean who died playing WoW, I think, as well, but I don't think that's unique to Korea, though. WoW is pretty...
WoW has killed people.
So that doesn't mean it's addictive. It just means it's bad to play.
I always just win with. I just have to turn this thing in. Well, maybe I can just get to the next level. I'm so close. And the next thing you know, it's like morning.
The game is just so bad that when you play it, you have a risk of dying.
That's the problem. It made the experience so smooth, you don't realize you're spending so much time playing.
That's the thing. Any one of these titles, you play the game for too long without a break.
How terrible would it be to go
off in the morning and you're not at work?
Oops. I'm really sick to tape off.
The Star of Hope says in the chat, if a lot of people do something, then sooner or later one will die doing it.
That's true.
Yeah.
I think we're having a higher proportion of people.
Which is why living is horrifically addictive, and we should figure out how to stop that.
As the description, by the way, of having Civ on number one, and going through the comments, I was surprised to see no one trashed Civ for being number one, which kind of surprised
me. It is addictive.
Mackie is disappointed.
No. Oh, in a nice way.
Oh, I thought you were like, oh, Mackie wanted controversy.
No.
That
just says something, that it's a game that people don't have the automatic urge to trash.
Here, let me go create an account, and we'll talk about this again.
Well, if you look at the best comment on the article, is your number one is completely right on this point. Just one more turn. And the reply to that is sweet, delicious, digital crack.
Yes.
So even the people who are against it in the comments are just like, meh, the other one should be included. They're not really trashing the ones there.
It was described as Sid Meier's history-based empire-building games don't catalyze the maddening must-replay-now angst of Tetris, nor do they have the immersiveness of MMORPGs. No, the addictiveness of these destroy ancient civilizations video games is more insidious. It might be time for bed, but you promise yourself you'll just find the perfect place to found your second city or quickly give Montezuma a much-deserved smackdown. And he also talks about Bismarck, but he doesn't make mention of Gandhi, whoever wrote this, so I don't know...
Mm-hmm.
The only derp point, by the way, is if you load the page that has Civilization and you see there's a Civ 5 screenshot, the caption says, courtesy of Microprose.
Really?
The no longer existing Microprose.
Oh, yeah. And the funniest part is that is a Civ 5.
Yep.
Good job.
That's hilarious.
Get your Morocco on.
I wonder about that being done accidentally, as in, I don't wonder at all.
Well, it could be like Microprose was the one who started, and they just kind of amalgamated a bunch of stuff, because they talked about Civ 4 in there, going over and getting some copper.
Yeah, that's true.
Horses were better anyway.
Meh.
Unless you were aggressive.
Aggressive, expansive, even.
Shaka.
In their comments, they get in a lot of trouble for putting Candy Crush on the list. Like, all Candy Crush is a copy of Bejeweled. And,
with candy.
Yeah, candy instead of jewels.
Given the various stories about people stuck playing it and spending hundreds of dollars on it.
Yeah, people have done that with Bejeweled long before Candy
Crush. Oh, yeah, it's, well.
And then there's Tetris before that.
Yeah, well, Tetris is in here.
Well, first off, if this was a best video game list, I'd be all over frickin' Candy Crush
right,
or you.
But that's why it's stupidly addictive.
Addictive was the thing. It's addictive, yeah. It's just not good.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the inevitable, but... Yeah, Candy Crush can't be the most addictive video game because it's not a game.
Yeah, it's not a video game.
Everybody I know on Facebook quit sending me requests to play it. I'm not playing it.
Now you should be like you said, no, I'm not playing that. I'm playing Bejeweled.
And then, of course, you got the Lawler.
League of Legends and Dota people who are...
Yeah, they're like, oh my god, you put StarCraft and WoW in there, but not League of Legends? You have literally no idea what you're
talking
about.
It's not that addictive.
Well, give it a year, and then it might be up there.
I wouldn't put LoL like top five, though.
I wouldn't put it as addictive. I mean, StarCraft started the whole eSports concept, and people are still playing it, both original and current. WoW has been going for more than a decade now?
I would have said 10 or 11 years, yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, sounds about right.
League of Legends? Whatever.
Is that like 5 years?
It just showed up.
Oh, World of Warcraft, November 2004, so almost 10 years. It's in its 10th year.
Yeah, see?
I played some of the very original Dota maps. It was great.
So, yeah, Lawler fanboys, shut up.
Such a case.
And besides, they're all freaking Blizzard, so get over it.
So what we're saying is Blizzard really knows how to make addictive games.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Diablo, if you're that kind of person, geez.
Yeah, I know people are still playing Diablo 2.
They cray.
Still playing Diablo 2 because they don't know how to uninstall it from their computer.
So, a nice Firaxis paid for an article by Eurogamer. It says at the bottom of it, this feature was based on a visit to Firaxis Games. Duque paid for travel and accommodation.
Oh, so they got paid for this.
Yes.
All right. As long as you understand that Duque paid for whatever is written on the screen.
Pretty much. Which is why it's a giant love letter to board games.
Yeah.
My question is, how much did they pay him? Because he said he went last year. It's July of the year after? The hell?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they had to put this in long form, and he had to research a whole bunch of Civil War references for some reason.
And that took more than half a year because...
Well, he had to...
I guess it's not a priority. They didn't pay them enough, clearly.
Apparently not. Grand Strategies of Firaxis, which is a relatively decent long-form article on how Firaxis has tried to mold their strategy and their games around sort of the openness and adaptability of board games, which is not a horrible thing. It's just kind of interesting given the fact that they're primarily single-player games, you know, and then with multiplayer sort of tacked on. The one thing I kind of had a question and sort of argument about was that at one point one of the designers... can't remember which one, says, to beat the highest level of AI in Civ, I have to play with such ruthless efficiency and insight, I almost feel I'm not myself anymore. I'm playing as a machine version of myself. And to me, are you really playing against the AI at the highest levels, or are you just playing against the handicap the game gives you? Deities, I mean, all of the massive amounts of bonuses the AI gives, I mean, that's always felt more like the problem than the AI's inability to commit a naval warfare.
The person who said that, by the way, that was Jake Solomon, the lead on XCOM Enemy Unknown. I don't know, I saw that quote there too, and I agree that when he says, you know, I'm not myself anymore, he's not himself as compared to how he was playing on the lower difficulty levels, or the higher but not highest difficulty level. Because I find even that you don't have to get to the highest. For Civilization V, Immortal, or Deity, when he talks about the ruthless efficiency and insight, I don't know about insight. It seems more rote memorization of this, that, and the other thing than really trying to adapt to your individual situation, which gets to kind of what you're saying there, Uber. I guess you could look at it either as how you have been handicapped or how the AI has been propped, which in a way is also your handicap because they get X and you don't. Playing as a machine version of me, how I wouldn't necessarily phrase it that way, but it's the reason why I play on Emperor. I could, but I choose not to try to learn the completely nitty gritty where it becomes more tactics than strategy for me.
It's the return on the value of time you'd have to put in to learn all that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, because at that point it's a question of whether or not you're just doing this as a machine or whether you're actually having fun with it. Because, I mean, if you have to plan out, you know, build
every single
X by
move.
Y, don't purchase thing at the exact specific amount of gold, it just makes you feel like you're an AI, not an actual player.
When you feel like you need to have a notebook beside you to take notes about when and what to do stuff, that's no.
Yeah.
You're still learning when you're having fun, but it's not fun learning.
Wait, there is such a thing?
Well, sure, there's fun learning. There's fun learning how to lay the smackdown on AI that done you wrong months ago in previous games. I mean, it's definitely fun.
You've been told grudges. Screw you, Gandhi.
But what did I do to you in this game?
Doesn't matter.
I feel like there's a difference between consistently learning from mistakes and doing the really fine-tuned micro, though. And Civ 5 does not have the fine-tuned micro of Civ 4 in the obscene numbers, because you don't have as many friggin' workers to manage and quite as much shop and city spam to manage. You're not running, like, 12 cities with dozens of workers in the VCs anymore. But I don't know. I think you can get to the highest levels without having to do that if you can consistently learn from your mistakes. I don't know where you draw the line. I mean, it's as simple as that. Where do you draw the line as a player in terms of where not willing to stop learning, in terms of getting better each time you play? And certainly external things like forums and whatnot, or watching others who are already successful, can speed up the process. But I don't know. I feel like if I play a game for 1,000 hours or something, I want to be at the level where I can handle highest difficulty without too much trouble.
I think that's also a question of how are you going to be satisfied with those 1,000 hours afterwards.
That's true.
Is that 1,000 hours I could have been building, like, a great wonder in Minecraft?
Yes.
Well, it just depends if you're enjoying what you're doing in the moment. It's as simple as that.
Or is that 1,000 hours I could have spent cultivating real-life relationships?
Well, that. That's not why we play games.
Yeah, what are you talking about now?
We don't play games to cultivate real-life relationships.
I'm not
how many actual relationships have you created through Civ?
You've never heard of the game Real Life?
That game sucks.
Yeah, there's no reason.
But the graphics are great.
Well, you only get to lose once.
Yeah.
Iron Man mode.
It talks about the board game things, which, by the way, I mean, Civilization on the PC did come from Civ, the board game, in the early 80s, the impetus for that. And it talks about how board games are great in making you think in terms of abstraction. And this is from Will Miller, one of the co-lead designers on Civilization Beyond Earth. And that's true. There is a lot of abstraction. And then the question is, when you talk about abstraction, questions get into gameplay versus realism. You get into even moral versus immoral questions. Like slavery in Civ 4, you know, the mind worms thing in Alpha Centauri. You know, I mean, all these questions that come up, and people then decide, are they going to play in a particular way because of quantity X, quantity Y? No. But I like the part where Solomon says, we have to marry theme and mechanics a lot more than games that simulate. One of the things is that there's a renaissance in the social aspects of board games right now. And I think it's also translating into, you talk about some of the addictive games on that addictive games list. And as soon as you're into a multiplayer situation, even though I do not like competitive PvP, I can definitely see that if you get to the point of defeating someone, and I've done a little bit of competitive PvP. That was really just in Civ 5, and that was for the achievements more than anything. But yeah, there is that little satisfaction of beating a human player more than beating an AI player.
Civ 6, now purely multiplayer, because we gave up on the AI.
There was a riot.
In the comments on here, there was, long may there be plenty of food production and culture to keep Firaxis going.
There we go.
They would need to work on their tourism a little, though.
I think long may there be plenty of money to keep Firaxis going, but okay.
Well, you want to feed the programmers, gosh.
NoHaman786 says, can't wait for the next Civ game to steal hundreds of hours of my life from me again. I don't know if it's really stealing when you allow it to happen.
More highway robbery.
More like you actively pursue it.
They take hundreds of hours. They don't necessarily steal it from you. I'll give you that. Nikitor says, I love the way these guys talk about the games. It's not a product. It's not what will sell best. It's what they can do to make it a better experience for the players. That's because you're talking to developers, not publishers.
True.
And you're not talking to somebody in marketing. But then Right Mind says, Civ is a terrible franchise for kids. Europa Universalis is much better and is actually grand strategy.
For kids?
There's no way in hell about a kid trying to learn a U4 at this point.
I know perfectly reasonable adults who just can't understand EU4 because there's various moving parts.
And they keep changing every damn thing.
Yeah, there's that too. But
the interface has design issues as well. Don't get me wrong, I love the game, but there's a lot that's wrong with it as well.
Well, but when Right Mind says actually grand strategy, to me that implies that there's somewhere in this article that Firaxis makes out this is grand strategy, and if they said that, I missed it. So I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, well, admittedly, it's in the title of the article, but...
Yeah, and they're probably talking about the strategy game design. No, the grand.
recorded for episode 205 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Majin, and Hammer Rabbi.
It is how do you play Civ? Not well. Ha ha! No.
On a PC, I don't know.
You guys are all true of us.
Almost 20,000 responses to this through Reddit in, I think it was June, essentially. Yeah. What I'll say is this is an interesting idea to try to gain some information. I know Phil and I, in the past, we have shared or ourselves gone on rants about how data is collected. And some of these questions and methodology for gathering the data is painful. I know some people feel physical pain, like internal injury type physical pain when they hear my puns. Well, my physical internal injuries come from gathering of data that's asked poorly.
Some of these are better or worse than others, but I don't see the original poll. I just see the results here in Google Docs.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, and what you can do with that address, if you just get rid of the / view analytics, then you can actually see the questions. You can still participate in this poll, even though it's dated June 2014, and you can still answer in July 2014. So right away, But it's important to see. It's a little more context to the answers. Just as an example, one of the things that's asked are your favorite civilizations and in Civ 5, and it breaks it down between Vanilla, Gods and Kings, Brave New World, and DLC. Okay. There are multiple options. Okay. But how come with Vanilla Civs you are told to pick 3, but for everything else you are told to pick 2, and in fact you can pick even more than that or less than that? On all accounts.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeesh.
Yeah, so you see, right away this is already starting to break down, because I am certain there is a decent enough percentage of people who figured this out or just incidentally didn't make enough choices or made too many choices, and the survey didn't say, you're doing it wrong, to try to make this data a little more valid. So to me, the way the question is phrased and the way the data is collected, the ones that are solid is a fraction of the overall questions, unfortunately. Like, do you tend to go tall or wide? Ideology of choice? What victory type do you most commonly shoot for? What do you normally build first? Do you normally attempt to found a religion? And what best describes your thoughts on Beyond Earth? All of these questions have reasonable qualifiers, and they are also one option choice only ones. Given that where multiple choices were possible, not only wasn't there a limit, or in some cases, I love this multiple options, but pick 2. Well, what if all the Gods and Kings civilizations were my favorites, and none of the Brave New World civs were my favorites? In both of those cases, I'm not going to either be able to progress with the survey, or it's going to record an anomaly as compared to other responses, which is unfortunate. The worst ones, I think, dismiss entirely the what type of maps do you tend to play, partially because it's broken up into part 1 and 2. And when it says what map types do you tend to play, that's plural, but you're limited to one choice for each question. What? How would you describe your overall play style? It says pick up to 3, which is, I don't know... That just seemed to be a smorgasbord of... it's like a big vat of stew. Let's just throw in any and all questions that come into our head. And the, what's your favorite Civ game? Expansions included in each entry. Oh, man. Like, if you asked me to pick my favorite Civ game now, I would say Civ 5, if that includes both expansion packs. But if it doesn't, if it just included Gods and Kings and vanilla Civ 5, it would be Civ 4. Also, when he says expansions included in each entry, some Civ titles have had more than 2 expansions, so which combinations of expansions are you talking about? I realize most people aren't going to take this survey this seriously or critique it this greatly, but I think if you focus on those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, those 6 questions I identified, you can get some pretty decent takeaways from those. Plus the fact that there is also a question about difficulty style. I also think that question, as well as how do you best describe your overall style, whether you're someone that prefers peaceful for culture or technology or your domination.
The main reason I play is to be an ass to Gandhi.
Well, if you need to prove it, can totally see that.
There's one of these questions that I'm curious about, because I haven't actually seen the results of the poll. The very last one, which says, which best describes your thoughts on Beyond Earth, those answers probably seem to me to tell me where the fans are, because a lot of people play this to simulate history. Beyond Earth is just a fictional future that they may not have any connection to. So I'm curious what those numbers were.
Weirdly different than I would expect for the answers.
Because, I mean, there's, It looks interesting, and I like futuristic games and stuff, but I played Civ in general because I like the history of certain cultures, and I like playing through simulated RP sort of level kind of stuff. But I'm curious what the Redditors would find to be their interest in terms of to play it, or do they do more stuff with Civ history?
I think the so excited can't wait answer should have been merged with the more like Alpha Centauri, the better. The more like Alpha Centauri, actually, the better got 3%, but the so excited can't wait also got 43%.
Really two separate things, because so excited can't wait just means you like the way it looks and then looks cool, but I'm still a little skeptical. That could be a separate section. And then the real why of it. Do you like Alpha Centauri or do you like Civ history?
I'm okay with that breakdown only because it says what best describes. It doesn't necessarily mean, and admittedly, it doesn't mean that it precludes all others by your selecting a particular choice.
Yeah. So only 10% of the people wanted to play Civ to simulate history. The Centauri existed already in the Civ history. So
yeah.
If you only want to play a history game, well, okay. But
It's more like that's kind of a phase of a player's history with a game, because initially if you're attracted to it because of the history, you're going to play maybe everything and be tired of it, and then now it's going to become a efficiency numbers crunching game for fastest turn or highest score or something like that. But for Beyond Earth, I like sci-fi stuff, but I'm not going to be particularly attached to instantly starting off with the culture I like or the one that I have an affinity for kind of thing. It's just be more like a violent, peaceful, or technological aspect or something of the game.
You learn to get an affinity.
Well, yeah, that's a built-in thing regardless.
You'll learn to love your affinities. But yeah, I mean, Beyond Earth is kind of separate from all of this. But, I mean, it does show that, give or take, what, 90%, somewhere in there? Because rounding errors are looking forward to Beyond Earth, even if skeptical.
Yeah.
But...
yep, looking forward to some degree, yeah.
Yeah. I was definitely interested in the difficulty one. That actually proves a bit more, because people talk like, oh, everybody in the forums always plays on DD.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Right. Only, well, they certainly like to talk about how they play on DD. Some prove it, some don't.
Yeah. At least maybe on the Reddit side, there's a lot less DD players, because this is all, again, self-identification.
Well, there's a lot of people who are not vocal on CFC, and there's plenty of information from the lurkers that would be more valuable than the regulars who are already there and have established how they play.
I wish for that question it had said, what difficulty do you normally play on? That would have been more value-added question, I think.
Yeah, well, you could normally play on the same difficulty that you play on. It does look like it's very properly statistically set up, or at least distributed. Because the main core is Prince, King, Emperor, which is, you know, basically expected.
Oh, yeah, that result didn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, the majority of the players should be somewhere between Prince, King, and Emperor. Although I would have expected Emperor to be higher than Prince by this point for the distribution.
It's pretty much stayed that way with Civ 4, too, even well into the game's life cycle. DD is slightly higher here, but not much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have expected the percentage for Prince and Emperor to be inverted.
Yeah, I would have figured Emperor is a little bit more, because that's the balance point. The fact that, you know, people are still playing Settler, Chieftain, Warlord, I mean, yeah, that's fairly normal. Learning curve.
Yeah, the game's fairly casual. The difference between a lot of the players who play on Deity and Immortal is just volume of knowledge. They sort of encyclopedically know the reactions in combat and stuff that other people would just sort of guess at. They would think that this unit's better than that one, but situationally it's not because they don't know that. So.
Yeah, it's how much effort you want to put into learning the game.
Exactly.
You do get some people running Settler in low levels like that who are actually very good players and are just trying to get ridiculous dates, too. That always happens, and it's always amusing to see space wins and the BCs and crap, so, you know.
The Hall of Fame stuff keeps that pretty active with the challengers. You can reload whatever settings you want, but playing Settler for max score and stuff, that is definitely a regular thing.
And achievement hunting.
Yeah.
Lol. Hunting, you say? If you mean another word.
Yeah, I mean, this seems more realistic for a distribution than, say, if it was a poll on CFC, where you'd see...
Where would we say we all play Deity all the time?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not true. The Civ 4 one on Deity did not have that.
The Deity one
distribution looks pretty darn similar to what we have here.
Yeah, but that's a more realistic one. Because you'll have plenty of people who say that they play on Emperor because they don't want to play on Immortal or DD because of the bonuses that the AI gets.
It becomes more of a question of where do you comfortably win a game versus where do you try to play.
Yeah.
There are plenty of people who can get I used to statistically post what mine was about 1 in 10 deity games I would win, about 50% of the immortal games I would win. It doesn't mean I never played the other difficulties. Those are just the ones that really gave me harder challenges.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to compare a poll like this on Reddit to CFC, that the fact that this result on Reddit is comparable to what you see on CFC helps validate the CFC information. And you might be saying, but the CFC came first, but tying to what Hammer Rabbi was saying is this is going to be more accessible to more people because you don't have to go and register an account on Reddit or otherwise like you would have to on CFC in order to participate in one of the polls.
Redditor's going to have generally probably a lot more responses than CFC will.
Yeah, it just depends. It depends on how fast it gets up. I mean, r/civ has quite a lot of people following it.
I can tell you the one above the what difficulty you play on is silly because many of these are tied together. Tall no, City with Wonders, that's the same thing for the most part. So it's not really an overall play style.
I think the tall or wide one without context of what precisely constitutes either is kind of iffy. But one that jumped out to me is the popularity of continents is so overwhelming. That's different from what I recall in the Civ 4 days. And it's actually a reasonable pull, too, because it doesn't have the ridiculous choices of the other. So there you go. 72% continent maps are picked.
Yeah.
That is a better question than the part two.
Yeah, the part two gets a little goofy.
Yeah, part two gets goofy, but I don't recall continents holding such weight previously. I mean, they were always a popular pick, but it seems more so now than in the past. And also, Pangaea really fell off. Mm. It's post-archipelago now.
I think Pangaea started to fall off with Gods and Kings expansion and then into Brave New World as the AI got better with water-based combat, since the majority of Civ 5 players are going to be single-player mostly, if not only. I think that is a big reason probably why. Although, that said, I am surprised that Continent is that strong. I would say like maybe 50 or 60% would tend to play with a Continental style map.
I would probably say the addition of religion and religion pressure plus the trade, the fact that you get more from further away, and ideology, neighboring close to ideologies and stuff like that. I think that would be the reason to push more for continents, because if you're on a continent and you found a religion, you're more likely to take over that continent. Whereas if you're on a Pangaea and you found a religion, well, so is everybody else on the same landmass. So
what about the naval mechanics themselves?
They've gotten better, but it wouldn't. But Archipelago is still like super easy.
Yeah, well, that's always been true in any Civ game that I've played.
But Pangaea and continents, I don't know. It depends on, you know, where you ask. It's usually, like, the default map. People go back and forth. But, like, people tend to find continents map slightly more balanced than Pangaea. Because you can't have, like, a single AI on a high difficulty level just wipe out the entire Pangaea with an early advantage.
Yeah.
I mean, continents, you can have them wipe out their entire continent. And then you have to deal with that. But
then you have boats.
Yeah, they won't jump to the other continent.
They won't blow up quite so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you go bring in EU terms here.
Super blah.
What if it's an accurate description?
That's true.
Blubby.
Well, that's kind of interesting to see the differences between the policy trees they're most likely and not most likely to pick. It's like, wow, probably gets a lot of hate there.
Followed by honor.
I know. I mean, I realize that honor's kind of situationally better
No. Honor first every game.
I, too, was surprised by Piedimaki with Brave New World in mind.
Yeah. Now that we have the religion and you can do a lot of things with the religion, why would you not want the piety? I don't get it.
Identity crisis is over, particularly when, to tie into another question about do you normally go for religion, I typically found a religion, and I usually try to found a religion, but don't always succeed, is like 80%.
I wonder why you're not succeeding.
You can do religion with tradition or liberty and not even bother with piety, and still get a good religion.
Yeah,
but it's even better. It can be reasonably even better if you choose piety.
It can be, but then you
just owns you.
Well, yes, because you're not growing with tradition or you're not expanding with liberty.
No. You're assuming that people would just choose piety or just choose piety first, and that I think that's a mistake to assume that.
Well, no, because by the time you're finished tradition, you're taking rationalism.
And now you're also, people are going to finish the social policy and not try to have a little bit from tradition and piety like I usually do, or liberty and piety.
Then you're doing it wrong.
No, not doing it wrong. No. That is absolutely not true. There are arguments for dipping a little bit into certain social policies. Some of them twin well together very nicely.
Well, let's explain some reasons, because some people play to get the fastest time. and the earliest turn to win, and that usually never involves piety. And that's just been something that's kind of been proven on forums, that it never involves piety. It doesn't mean you can't do it or that it's not fun or interesting. It's just not a path to the fastest turn victory. And this is why, yeah, for winning the game, and this even goes to culture victories. You'd think that if you're going to go for a culture victory, you'd dip into that for a faster win, but that's even been debunked mostly in Brave New World. It's the kind of thing where you realize whichever victory you're setting out to do, you only have so many policy choices, period. Which ones are you going to get? Because it's not that they're all bad, it's just that some are much better than others. And this is sort of what the community has collectively decided, that piety is useful, but it's not the most useful, and you kind of don't ever really need to if the end goal is fastest turn.
Or even just winning on higher difficulty level. You could definitely go for slower win, because, I mean, I definitely do not focus on fastest win. I just focus on, you know, the win.
Yeah.
But you have an option of completely losing if you go piety and you don't do it right.
Well, the mix of other things that go with piety.
Exactly. You know, I mean, the question is, what three policy trees are you most likely to pick? So there's more than one qualifier in that question. And I will acknowledge that, yes, it's important to keep difficulty level in mind. And so it's good that actually the difficulty level question was also included.
Yeah. So tradition, liberty, commerce, and rationalism, with obviously rationalism beating out all others by just a bit, are the top four in there. But tradition and rationalism really high up there because, yeah, a tradition rationalism game basically wins you all victory conditions.
Oh, yeah. I'm not surprised by tradition and rationalism performance at all, or even liberty for that matter, but just piety and like,
Hashtag balanced options.
Yep.
But is anyone surprised by the showing of patronage, exploration, or aesthetics?
No. Patronage is kind of, I don't know.
If this was G&K, it would be different because you could do the patronage CS Friends thing. But when they took that away, the numbers would have to have plummeted quite a bit.
Yeah, plus with addition of ideologies, if you really want to play with CSs, you don't really need to go to patronage. Like, you go freedom, send all the trade routes over anyways. There's many ways to play with city-states, or just wipe them off the map because they're boring and annoying, depending on your playstyle, of course. Stuff that you get in patronage is less interesting now than it used to be, even though it hasn't really changed.
For the meager investment of, I think, two policies, you could have friends with all of them when you met them for free, and you get their minor bonuses of +2 faith or +3 culture or whatever forever. And that was a big value, but now they took that away. It's much more investment in terms of your time and effort to get those bonuses. So it's
Scholasticism at one point was good.
Yeah.
And then they nerfed out the city-state science, and then that became a little less good.
The ideology of choice made me cry, okay? Freedom 51%, though.
Freedom!
Oh, hell no! I am throwing the smackdown, Reddit. You are wrong.
Right.
Okay, I think it's important to also tie this back to what victory condition they say they tend to go for. Science was at 46%, followed by domination at 26% and culture at 16%. When I look at that question, that result, then I understand a little more the ideology of choice, but it still makes me sad.
Yeah, freedom is more overpowered than the others. I've been saying that for a long time. So makes it really easy to do any of the four victories.
Freedom and order are the two that I see chosen the most. Autocracy is kind of obvious if you're going to go for domination type stuff, but mostly I've seen freedom and order being the two that everyone picks.
The autocracy was a big issue. Then there at least was a bit of a patch change for autocracy along the way. But I think because people got so used to freedom and order being like the better one, is by the time the patch came out to give a little boost to autocracy, it was too late. People already had it set in their mind. I mean, personally, I like autocracy better.
We recently in our Game of the Month did a fairly different setup where you start in the modern era. And when you start in the modern era, when you first found, you instantly get to choose your ideology. And you get to choose it before you've met anybody or know what they're doing. So it was a bit of a diplomatic crapshoot to try to predict who's going to hate you in the future. It was pretty fun, though, because each one of them was strong. Because when you found first, you get instantly the first two choices. Plus, you're in the modern era, and you already had a fair amount of culture automatically given to you. So you already picked plenty of others ahead of that.
talked about Civ Rev 2 extensively on the last episode, and guess what? The reviews aren't very positive overall. No.
Understatement.
I call this critics mixed, users ticked. Kotaku article, more from Kotaku, my goodness sakes. It's hard to mess up a Civ game, is how it starts. Well, I don't actually know if it's that hard to mess up a Civ game, to be honest with you, but anyway. At one point, it says that the users don't compare Civ Rev 2 to the launch version of Civ Rev 1, and why should they? They compare the well-polished to the barely-polished, and they only find one of them to be too dull. It's that simple. They should have waited, because surely the game will be updated. They should have waited, because surely the game's creators will add more modes, more units, and more civilizations, or so they could assume. Instead, at launch, they got something that some of the people behind these games must have thought was an ample reason for a consumer to buy this new game early. More beautiful graphics. So at this point, I'm thinking, are you seriously rationalizing what's going on? But then this sentence. There too, however, this game is begging for a term paper on the priorities of game design. Okay. Game that's solid and not great. Seems like a contradiction, but okay. A game with so-so unit control, so-so options, and graphics no one really needed. Do you like the shinies? Are you willing to put up with some less than optimal gameplay that you've had for the better part of a decade in the original? Then go for it. Average ratings are about 65% across game rankings and Metacritic, and the median is 70. Even those that are positive qualify the positives. Like, Civilization Revolution 2's flaws don't detract from its addictive nature. So you talk about flaws, and you talk about detraction before you talk about its addictiveness.
Actually, I'm kind of surprised they even made it up to 66 as a Metacritic score, because iOS games and stuff like that almost always tend to be sub-50 or somewhere around 50, just because it's a mobile game versus a normal game.
Quote-unquote normal.
Yeah, no, it's just they usually get lower scores in general if it's not on PC or console.
Well, I think that comes up more in the user reviews.
Well, yeah, the disconnect between, well, okay, on Metacritic, there's only 3 user reviews, so that one's kind of...
Although 14 ratings.
Yeah, so, still, you're probably better off not buying it at the moment and seeing if they can fix it.
And actually, a number of these reviews come from mobile sites, like sites dedicated to mobile use, including mobile gaming. It's essentially, the graphics are great, and if you really want them, then go for it, but wait for the price to drop. That's a recurring theme. It's even like, don't get it right now, because the price will drop, and or they say, kind of like Kotaku said, there'll be updates, like Civ Rev got on God as a Geek. Love the site name, by the way. If the original Civ Rev didn't exist, then I'd be praising Civ Rev 2 for bringing the Civilization series to mobile. Instead, this is a game that doesn't need to exist. Now Gamer, an oversimplified equivalent of the console Civilization game that doesn't even beat its predecessor. U.S. Gamer's Kat Bailey, when she says, this sequel feels like a missed opportunity to improve on a good idea. Yeah, that. They focused on that which is not what Civ has been about in the first place, which is graphics. That's what was updated.
And that's what was sold.
So does this just feed into a slightly growing theme of never buy a Firaxis game on launch? Or
It is not a Firaxis game.
Nope.
Although you're thinking it is, Uber, is, and we talked about it in the last episode, is an understandable misunderstanding.
Some awards?
Yes, Escapist had their Best of E3 2014 award winners, and hey, Beyond Earth, Things We Want to Play Very Badly apparently would be the right title for that.
It apparently beat out one other game. I'm not even kidding. If you look at the game critics, the nominations, there's one other strategy game.
Best strategy game was Civ, Beyond Earth, and Grey Goo.
On Game Revolution, Nick Tan says, there weren't many strategy titles this year, so you might think that Civ Mars Civilization Beyond Earth is merely an unworthy default winner.
Yeah.
What?
You might think that.
Mackie Rage. But Firaxis Games is taking a risk by moving the franchise into the future.
No, they're making it more awesome by taking it to the future.
What? As opposed to the other games when you could wind up in the future anyway?
As opposed to Alpha Centauri, which sold really, really well for them.
No, but this isn't that game, Torn.
Yeah, I know, but it's still taking
totally the not
concept and putting it into space. You know, they've tried this formula before, and it did work. I don't see how risky, quote-unquote, that is.
No, I think what he's saying, Mackie, is that Alpha Centauri isn't part of the Civilization franchise because it doesn't have Civ in the title.
What?
I'm not saying that because I never played it.
Which is what?
Recorded for episode 204 with Dan Q, Makalua. the Mian Team, Mad Jin, and Bruno Prado Santos.
Civilization Online will be allowed to have a Christopher Tin theme, wrote a new song called Song of the Mountain.
He was approached specifically to do this theme and then wrote this song with that time.
Will it make another Grammy? So there's an interview with him talking about decision processes behind it. How does he come up with an idea for how to the song? Why do you use children in your songs? Stuff like that. Beyond Earth, are we going to get some Grammy? Because if I didn't get any.
Well, as part of his interview, Tin does say, I'd love to score a complete Civilization game. Writing the title songs is a blast, of course, but I'd love the opportunity to conceive the complete musical identity of a Civilization game from start to finish. I can't imagine a more exciting scoring opportunity, one in which music from every culture and every era of history is yours to explore and integrate into a musical whole. I'd like getting to write your own musical encyclopedia. I find that idea thrilling.
Well, there you go.
Is there an equivalent to the Fry character from Futurama saying, shut up and take my money?
Yeah.
This needs to happen. I'm shocked. I mean, this is really coming home for Tin, because he was asked to write the theme for Civilization IV, got himself a Grammy for that, plus a Grammy for the album that the song was on, is now widely sought for musical composition, and is saying, even despite my busy schedule, this is something I would like to do, and then goes on and on about it in an entire paragraph in an interview.
Hmm.
Ah, so hopefully it's just a matter of when as opposed to if.
Yeah, there you go.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
So, I guess wrap-up time? Just, I'm apparently next on this?
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently. So, thank you for listening to this insanity-fueled whatever. Thank you for having me on the show. I've been the guest co-host, Uber Marklar. Joining me today were Dan Q.
I'm most addictive.
Makalua.
It's going to require more water now.
Mad Jin.
Time for coffee.
And the Mian Team.
Damn it, Mian Team.
Damn it, Phil.
Damn it, Phil, you had one job.
One job to nuke everyone.
But I never missed that job.
Yes, headphones. It helps if I put them on my ears so I can hear.
It's a good thing you didn't hear some of the things that were said. That's okay.
We may have taken advantage.
Yeah.
So, once again, my timing was not quite where it would be to walk right in the middle of the conversation, and you're going, boo, 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 mucky, mucky.
You're a bit late to have heard the common law marriage thing, but live happily, Mackie.
Okay.
I wish you two the best.
We are not married.
See, this is about free consenting, just like I said.
There are ways around that one, Dan.
Hey, Phil.
Hi.
I had an intro that would have gotten me slapped.
What, by Dan?
No, by you, probably. I was going to say, welcome to karaoke edition.
Sing-off, yes!
Yes, have to do the sing-off.
The guest has initiated the sing-off. They're the guest, Maggie. We have to do what the guest wants.
But it's Uber.
Record date, July 19th, 2014. Sivcraft Clips, copyright Sivcraft Dev. Joystick 10th Anniversary Clips, copyright Joystick. Song of the Mountain Clips, copyright Christopher Tin. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth Sound Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.